Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to Boss Files. I'm Poppy Harlow. For the next several weeks, we're looking at how leaders from all around the world are making tough choices for their businesses, their customers, and their employees during the coronavirus pandemic. Today, I'm talking with Beth Ford, CEO of Minnesota-based Land O'Lakes. You know them, of course, for the butter and the milk you see on the grocery store shelves across the country. So many of you, especially parents, have been asking me, is there enough food? How sound is the food supply given all of the panic buying and those images of empty store shelves? So I wanted to have Beth on to ask her exactly that.
Yeah, there's plenty of food right now, and actually farmers are still working. This is an essential industry as defined by the government, but it actually is defined by all of us, and we know that.
And what about the supply chain and delivering all of that food with cities on lockdown? And what does that mean for farmers across the heartland? Plus, being a CEO of a Fortune 500 company at home with teenage kids, we get into all of it.
No, the good news is we put in a little structure for them. Hey, first thing in the morning, you got to get some physical activity, work out a little bit, do something, stretch. We're trying to make them do all sorts of chores.
Here's our conversation. Hi, Beth. Thanks for doing this.
You're welcome, Poppy. Thanks for asking.
All right, so let's just start on the very basic question. And for some background here, by the way, you, CEO of Land O'Lakes in Minnesota, my home state. I've known you for years. And, you know, the heartland is close to my heart, certainly, and all these farmers and really feeding America. So let's just talk about that. Is there enough food, Beth, right now, even if this crisis persists, the 18 months that is being potentially projected by the federal government?
Yeah, there's plenty of food right now. And actually, farmers are still working. This is an essential industry as defined by the government, but it's defined by all of us. And we know that. So farmers are still working. They're in the field. We have enough supply. Milk production is strong, for instance, right now. I think that the concern that is voiced at the moment is distribution challenges. And then over the long term, as we get back into the fields, especially on the grain side and the grower side, and then as we're in harvest in Florida on citrus and that is labor availability. My belief is that farmers always figure this out. There's some mechanization that they've leveraged, not everywhere, not possible everywhere, but they work through the challenges. So I want to go back to the very basic. Is food production strong? Food production is strong. Goods are moving. We see that across our portfolio. Production is strong. And, we believe that the industry is working hard together and with different agencies to make sure that stays strong.
So why are we walking into the grocery store and seeing so many empty shelves?
I think it's the unknown. And I believe I heard you in different other discussions, Poppy, talking about we don't know the length of time, right? We don't understand. And there's some uneven policies that are out there around different states and locales about whether you can go out, what you can do, should you stay at home? Now schools are closing. So you have this unknown situation, uncharted territory, and people are going to try to get back to the basics. Do I have enough food? And what do I need to do to make sure I have enough supply? Because we don't know, are we going to be like in Silicon Valley area, hold shelter in place? Yes, we can come out, but only one or two at a time. So I think it's the unknown that is causing some of this behavior.
What's going on with the farmers in the Midwest right now? How does this impact all of them?
The farmers are back in the field. I always think of them as the original entrepreneurs. They are resilient. Farming is an outdoor sport. There's always variables they have to deal with. Now, milk production has been strong, up a bit this year, because actually in the middle of last year, there was a good supply-demand balance, and so they started making money. That there has been consolidation occurring in dairy production. It was at an 8% clip. Many dairy farmers small were going out of business. Right now, we have 34,000 plus just around 34,000 registered dairy producers in the country, 9.5 million milking cows. So milk production remains strong, fewer producers, and those producers are able to be more resilient in their production. They were making a little money. Now what has happened is that milk demand, let's say 1 to 2% goes into food service. 7% of milk goes into school lunch programs, right? International shipments have slowed because there's not container availability. So dairy powders. So what's happening? Production is strong. Distribution for drinking milk, cheese, butter, you know, refrigerated desserts, strong. Retail is offsetting some of this decline in food service, but it's pressuring at the farm level some of the price they get for their milk. It was at $19 to $20 a hundredweight a few months ago, and now it's down to $17 because of these market pressures, the ones that I was talking about, that plus the strength of the U.S. dollar.
This is not just about one sector, right? So not just about dairy production, for example, or the farmers. You mentioned at the top, across sectors, like the energy sector. What are you worried about right now? What keeps you up at night on that front?
Well, you know, growers, so corn and soybeans, you know that over the last couple of years, soybean production, which goes into animal feed, and 60% of soybeans had been being shipped to China. Everybody was looking forward to the passage of USMCA and USMCA and the phase one deal with China, and that production and that goods would start to flow again. In the interim, of course, Brazil has started to produce at significant levels. The wheat production in Ukraine has increased. And so those other countries have taken over some of our supply lines. But still, farmers were really excited to get back in the field. There was an estimate that there would be like 94 million acres of corn planted. So the ethanol discussion, the energy market, what are we looking at? Well, probably about 35 to 40% of corn goes into ethanol. And ethanol is not, you know, blending with ethanol in a market where the energy sector has, you know, pricing has kind of collapsed in a variety of areas, and certainly in the United States, means that it will be less profitable. And thus, those ethanol plants, again, in rural communities, 70,000 jobs plus tied to ethanol production, are going to be impacted. And then the question is there going to be less demand for the corn? And thus, corn price will fall. It's at about $3.50 right now. Could it get into the $2 and some? And in that situation, farmers don't make money. At $3.50 to $3.75, they may break even if they own some of their land and then, you know, lease to get scale against their assets for the rest of it. And so it's kind of a sideways view. But you can see, you know, on the one hand, you can say, well, their diesel that they use for their own equipment would be lower. Yes, but the demand that they usually support for ethanol will be reduced. And that plus whether goods are going to flow into China, Mexico, other areas could mean that grain prices are pressured.
You know, I had not even thought about that and how interconnected it all is. Okay, Beth, let's talk a little bit about your workers and being a CEO and leading a big company in the middle of all of this. You're working at home. You've got teenage kids at home. We'll get to managing that in a minute. But what's it like for you as a leader in the uncharted, in the unknown? I'm sure you've got a lot of employees who are nervous, who are scared, who are working from home and trying to figure out childcare. What are you doing?
Yeah, this is a very difficult time. I think most CEOs are trying to stay together and have conversations. We do that here, for instance, in Minnesota, Minneapolis Business Partners. I'm part of the Business Roundtable Board. We have conversations. What's happening? You know, this is the time to be over communicate with your team, to stay calm. Calm is contagious. To be very clear about their health and safety is primary. So we've gone to work from home for all of our headquarters staff, a couple thousand of our employees. Those who are necessary and in the field, we have very specific processes they have to go through before they come into our manufacturing facilities. They have to take, you know, have their temperature taken, or they take the temperature. We're grouping different employees together, not all together, so that we have fewer employees that are working together. But most directly, I want to go back to this. This is an uncertain time. It is disorienting for many. Many have never worked from home. They have childcare issues. they have concern and fear, and they're constantly watching messaging, what's happening. And what we try to do as a team is over communicate, say, you know, get some structure against your work. We're still doing work. We're doing the business of the business. Connecting with them multiple times a day. And we have a hotline for through HR. What are your concerns? Trying to be responsive to that. You know, every company every year as they start talks about, you know, how aggressive we're going to be on the business. And we're still going to do that. We're doing business. But the priority for my management team, we meet every morning at 8 a.m. for a call. We're going through every business. What are they hearing from the staff? The priority are the people issues, talking with them, understanding their concerns, living our values, that this is about our community. And we do the same thing with our members, spending a lot of time with them, talking to them about their concerns. Because remember, 96% of farms are still family owned. And so these are families. And they have the same concerns. Their kids are out of school. They have to have access to food. Many of them don't have technology availability, right? Broadband, which is something we've been talking about for a while. And so how are they going to take advantage of telemedicine and teleeducation? It's an uncharted time, Poppy. I think you have to go back to be a good person and understand the concern and listen and communicate.
Who are you, Beth, as we wrap up, just a few more questions, who are you looking at for leadership in this crisis, right? What leaders are you looking at that you think are doing a good job, or who do you look to in moments like this? Because I think it's a fair bet to say you never thought you'd face this when you became CEO.
No, I don't think any of us thought we'd ever see something like this. You know, I always look for, first of all, the scientists. I look for the experts to tell us, to give us clarity as to what are the best ways we can protect our workers, our farmers, our members, our families. I think the experts that I look at are the ones who are putting their people and everybody first as they can. And so those that are saying in their platforms, they're doing everything they can to, again, communicate with their teams, but also make sure that they continue to stay employed. And then thinking outside of ourselves. This is a time where many of these children who are at school, who now can't go to school, don't have a meal. They have been getting their breakfast and lunch at school. And so we're concerned about that. We're concerned about food banks, who also are not getting as much support because restaurants have closed down. And so food supply is not going necessarily in there. In those moments, beyond listening to the scientists, it is about listening to others who need more. And in my view, the farmers, this cooperative has at its values, at its fundamental values, and we're coming into our 100th anniversary. I see this across the country. They're most concerned with others. And I think if we all put ourselves outside ourselves for a moment and take care of those who are going to be in most need, I think that's the best position to be in.
Of course. I'm so glad you brought that up. I think a lot about, especially the food insecure kids in this country. And we're talking to Lauren Bush, Lauren of Feed, and also Feeding America United Way, all about this stuff. Finally, Beth, what's it like being CEO at home with teenage kids? How's that going?
Wow. You know, they're on spring break. Obviously we canceled our plans. You know, 2 15-year-old boys, and then we have a nephew with us who's 17 and a 17-year-old daughter. You know, the good news is we put in a little structure for them. Hey, first thing in the morning, you got to get some physical activity, work out a little bit, do something, stretch. We're trying to make them do all sorts of chores. It's a gift for me, I'm going to be honest. It's hard, and I see this. For people who don't have childcare, my kids are in teenage years. Obviously, with my role, I travel a lot and I miss out on many critical conversations or things that I would wish I could see for my kids, how they're growing, what their thoughts are. It's in many ways for me a blessing because I get to see them close up, spend time with them. And you know, that's terrific. Even when it's bumpy, even when it's funny and hilarious.
You're so right. I feel the same. It's taxing, but a blessing. I roasted marshmallows on candles in the backyard with my 4-year-old yesterday. That was our afternoon. So, you know, thank goodness for that time, right?
Right.
Thank you, Beth. We wish you guys luck and the farmers keep us posted.
I will. Thanks, Poppy.
If you enjoyed this episode of Boss Files, make sure to keep tuning in over the next several weeks as we talk to more business leaders about how they're coping with the uncertainty and all of the challenges presented by the coronavirus pandemic. And as always, leave us a rating. Let us know what you think on your favorite podcast app. You can always find me on social media at Poppy Harlow CNN. I'd love to hear from you about who you want to hear from. We'll be back soon with another episode of Boss Files. Thanks so much for listening.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.